Welcome, everyone, to the Energy Advisors Podcast. I'm your host, Rex, that energy guy. Glad to have you with us, no matter where you're listening to us around the globe. You know, we just got a new country that jumped on over in Italy. Imagine that, 13 countries now. So glad to have those listeners as we continue to grow the podcast. Say, listen, life is busy, so you don't always get a chance to listen to every episode. So if you missed episode number 55, go back and listen to it. It's an interesting update on what's going on with the whole world of EVs. And is an EV a good getaway vehicle? Sort of a fun one. Okay, so today I'm excited to talk to you about an interview with some guys that got some great technology. You know, the world of AI is on fire, and there's so many interesting things happening, and this applies in the energy industry also. So I'm excited to tell you about Mentus Technologies and introduce their co-founders. But before we get there, I'd like to thank the sponsors in our show, because our partners, they make it happen. Our first partner is our friends over at Power Solar. These guys know what they're doing. They service 23 states in the United States now. As ethical as you're ever going to find, it is the new way that rooftop solar is going to be deployed as the industry continues to consolidate. If you'd like to get in touch with them, it's really easy. And of course, get in touch with any of our partners. Just go to the energyadvisors.today website, fill out the form, and we'll get you connected. Our next friends in the show is our good friends over at Universal Wind Kinetics. Listen, if you have not looked at residential wind, it's amazing. Cool advancements. And I'll tell you what, these little babies can generate as much power as multiple solar panels. And if you have solar, it's an easy add-on. And then our good friends over at Solar for America. You know, what I love about these guys is they are now manufacturing their solar panels in the United States. Now, independence around the world is important. We don't want to have all of our supply chain locked up in certain countries, and especially if those countries don't like us. So go ahead and reach out to them through the website. Okay, with no further ado, I'm really excited about this. You know, I geek out on the podcast sometimes because I'm just a software nut, but I'd like to introduce to you our friends over at Mentus Technologies. And I've got on the podcast with us today the co-founders, Chris Dracola and Brian Johnson. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Good to do. All right. Well, you know, it's not just about the technology. We always like to learn about the people behind the power. And so, Chris, if you could, I'll start with you. We'll go backwards in alphabetical order today. Chris, if you could give us a little bit of background about how did, you know, you don't have to go back to the year you were born, but maybe just some of your professional stops along the way, and how did you end up being one of the co-founders of Mentus?
Yeah, I've been direct sales for pretty much my entire career. I actually started knocking on doors selling Curry vacuum cleaners about almost 16 years ago now.
Wow, a door-to-door king, huh?
Yeah, that back in the day when we used to carry that vacuum door-to-door, and it was a good old time out in Gulfport, Mississippi, and traveled all over the place and built some franchises. And that's when I actually moved from that to solar. Okay. And I kind of bounced back and forth between solar and alarms for a couple of years. Started in solar in 2010, really dug my heels in about 2013 and stayed in it. My first solar dealership was in 2016. And that's when Brian and I met, was the end of 2016. And I expanded my company out to multiple territories, and I partnered with multiple installers, worked with some installs in that time as well. And it was in 2020 when we started noticing a shift in the dynamic of how solar was being sold, the low barrier to entries. And yep, we realized that something needed to be in place and ready for if it took a dive downwards. And that's when Brian and I really started digging our heels in on this and started developing it and shifted the company towards, after actually that one, we really built another one to prove concept of how some of these protocols can work. And then went all in last year when SB 293 was announced back in April of last year.
Yep. Okay. Great. All right, Brian, you're up. What? Give us a little, our audience, a little bit of background on you.
Yeah, after college, I was doing some work in the construction field, and on the sales side. But for me, it wasn't as exciting, and I just kept seeing solar. This was prior to 2010 at the time.
Okay.
But I kept, I was in the Bay Area and was seeing solar, being announced more and more, seeing it in more homes, trucks going around town and whatnot. So I was like, I got to get into that. And yeah, kind of clawed my way in, started it with one of the large companies at the time that we were helping to scale up the operation to go from a small company to one of the nation's largest companies at that time. And so I helped scale the sales team up and really put into place a good hiring plan and especially training plan around consultative sales. And I think we've all appreciated the fact that solar can be a pretty technical investment and something that if you jump in potentially too quick with the wrong information, it could have some devastating effects of it. And so, right from the outset was just focused on making sure the organization could be focused on a consultative approach.
Okay.
Make sure consumers were taken care of, and that could be leading toward long-term success. But I moved from that into the finance space, spent a while there. That's where I met Chris, and so I was building finance programs for the industry and was starting to see firsthand some of the compliance issues and potential loopholes, or again, ways that consumers could be potentially harmed, capital providers could be potentially harmed. This can expand into manufacturers, even the federal government too, right? The tax credit.
Yeah.
And so that's where, I don't need to repeat what Chris said, but we came together, we saw the issue. Now we're focused specifically on solving the issue nationwide and now globally.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, and you both touched on this. There are so many two boys, a dog, and a ladder type operations out there. And sometimes they'll do and say just about anything to get a deal. And it causes lots of issues. And, you could pave the street of whatever city you choose with all the horror stories of people who've been burned by this. And I've always said, just as I got into solar and started looking around at that, is shame on the industry. I think adoption rates would be higher if they approached the market in a little different way than just so many of them are door knockers. I think the industry would be better if they did a little more upgrades of the professionalism of some of the people that are, standing on the porch or trying to get these things done, and a little more issues around stringency around compliance of, all types of aspects of the contract, what systems will do, financial, everything. It's a scary part of the business. Okay. So
but
you
one
guys
battery will power your entire neighborhood, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. You'll never have another electrical bill. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Sure. It's a tax rebate, not a credit. So it gets to be pretty hairy. So when you guys put Mentus together, everybody's got a business plan. What did that look like when you guys said, okay, we think we've got something here?
It was really one of those on a bar napkin type of situations when we were drawing everything out.
Yep. The best ones happen that way.
we took a look at it from the top down. Okay. So I'm boots on the ground. I've been knocking doors for 16 years of my career. I recognize where there's potential for growth and where there's, for lack of a better term, necessary evil of having, certain types of marketing approaches that we have today, right?
Right.
The issue that we run into is that there is no standard to train. There is no barrier to entry. Anybody can not just go sell solar. I can meet somebody on the corner today and they could be making $4,000 tomorrow in a house because I gave them a piece of paper that gave some numbers and they don't even have to, they're not even fact checked, right?
Right, exactly.
That's actually the problem in the industry, is that there's no standards. So there's only a handful of really malicious people that are doing this intentionally to harm people. The other 95% of the industry believe that they're doing or saying the right thing because that's the way they were trained, or that's the way their company told them to do it, or that's the way that they heard it online or one of the solar groups. And there's so much conflicting information when you see that. So we took it from the approach of what are other industries that have similar financing terms, similar sales tactics, similar products, and how can we help build compliance in something that's necessary to drive the industry forward without slowing down the industry?
Right.
And it's one of the most sought after careers in sales would be real estate.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a very professional career. You have to have time invested into it. You have to learn a lot. There's a lot of laws that are important in order to be able to get there. And where the industry was going at the time in 2020, and we saw the down curve, it's like, well, there's no standard of training. Mm-hmm. The government steps in. We're going to run into what we ran into in Nevada, SB 293, where they restricted. If anybody doesn't know, that's where they're basically restricting 1099 sales. You have to be direct to the contractor now, and you have to work for the contractor to be able to sell.
Right.
The problem with that is that there's no standards that are defined, and you can't enforce a standard that's never been defined. Right.
Right.
So we built and we took from every major license industry where there's complaint tracking. It ties the individual, their broker history, broker agent relationship. Right. That would be dealerships where you should have some skin in the game. You should have some time in the industry in order to be able to have a dealership. You shouldn't be working in the industry for a week, be offered a red line, start your own solar company is what they're calling it, but they're a dealership, right?
Yeah.
It's a solar sales organization.
Right.
And have that broker agent relationship in solar. So you have more, so you have people who are operating at a higher level, who are owning the company, number one. And then number two, high standards attract high quality. Now you're bringing in better quality people, and they have to be tested to a standard. They have to be trained to a standard. They have to be held to that standard. They have to be continually educated throughout the year on the evolving policies and rebate versus deduction. You can't look at their taxes. You can't make these type of, and that's really what that Mile High viewed. And then it started boiling down to, okay, here's a licensure platform.
Okay.
Now it slowly evolved into start every sale with the end result in mind.
Okay.
Well, the end result still isn't being taken care of,
right?
Current end result of a sale is high cancellation rates, high customer complaints, major issues and complaints directly to HEs and to the installers. My system isn't working right. I was told it was free. Bad marketing. So how do we tie that together? And it's putting these other pieces and technologies that we've built over the course of the last 3 years to really have it a full circle to where somebody who's coming into the industry can be trained to a standard, held to a standard, really present information that they know is factual, hold the fiduciary responsibility of the consumer, and then the capital is protected on the back end through automated AI compliance tools that we've built out for finance companies, installation organizations.
Nice. So tell our audience, who do you target your services to?
Yeah. So, right now what we're focusing on, like Chris was saying, we do a lot of work with capital providers, right? Like there's this capital protection aspect of things. Additionally, there's the focus on installation companies, right? So capital providers, they want the compliance, programs. The installation companies are looking at licensing standards, just getting that aspect all set up. We do work even at the government level, like on lobbying, industry information, things like that. And then, most importantly too, consumers are end result. They are in consumer. And so there's an aspect where consumers can go look at somebody's license standing. They can see if somebody's got complaints filed against them. They have the peace of mind through some of these other compliance tools that, like, hey, this is thorough. They're making sure that this is validating. They're confirming this information again about tax credits, utility bills, how programs work, interest rates, things like that. So we could touch kind of all aspects of it, but there's different parts of our portfolio for different users.
Well, it's I'm excited about this because I'll give you an example perspective. I'm a member of the Colorado Solar and Storage Association. And here in Colorado, that's the association that the industry for installers and technology companies, contractors, consulting, you name it. And of the 292 members of CASA, there's about 65 members who are installers, okay? Now, those installers, their profiles are different. You have some that are vertically integrated or EPC. You have some that are just sales organizations. And they're varying in size, you know, all kinds of sizes there. And it's been my prediction, you know, I've been in this tech business for a long time, and I apologize if some people get offended, but I think solar is nothing more than technology. I mean, it's just a technology you throw on your roof. I mean, when you look at the controllers, the smart panels, all the things that are going on there. And so it's, I just look at this industry and I have concerns about it because there's just so many. There's going to have to be consolidation, you know, to do those things. And I think some of the rigor that you folks are bringing to the table are going to help with that. And it is good. I mean, I'll give you a quick example. I'm old. Okay. So I've been around for a while in tech. When the PC came out, so not only just the towers and the desktops and the laptops, there were about 60 manufacturers. And so many of these companies, there were so many choices. So you had Apple over here on one side, and then you had all these companies, Everex, Gateway, Dell. There was a slew of these folks. And, well, the market shook itself out. And now there's just a handful. You've got HP, Dell still cranking out there. Toshiba, they may still be doing some of that. IBM sold to Lenovo, except. But so what I'm trying to say is things shake out. And I think you guys are helped doing that. Do you see things that way?
Oh, absolutely. And we're starting to see it now. Every industry has a bubble. We saw it in cell phones where there was like 50,000 different phones that you could get. And a Nokia was definitely one. I had a brick phone. You know, we're all old here, right? But now you essentially only have two. There's a couple of other manufacturers, but it's either Apple or Samsung, and you don't go anywhere else.
That's right.
Just like you mentioned with computers. And it's now still basically that same way too. You have Samsung and you have Apple. There's always, as soon as that bubble pops, it's when the industry commoditizes and you start seeing it become more regulated, and more regular to consumers, where consumers are more calling in than they are being approached in a direct sale. That's going to happen in solar. The problem is with the view from the consumers and from the government right now, it's actually putting a slowdown on the ability to commoditize the industry.
Right.
And it's really putting a stain. So we're consolidating the industry. You're seeing a lot of big companies either, you know, combining forces or going out of business this last year, but consumers reaching out hasn't increased.
No.
And that's why we saw it in alarms back in early 2000s. We're still really, really heavy door knocking. You had a million different alarm companies out there, and now you have Viv and ADT, Monotronix, right?
Yep,
like those,
right.
And then you have Simply Safe for a couple of the smaller for the in-home. That's the way the industry should have gone over the course of this next 10 years.
Right.
And you have the big three that pop up, and those are the names that are known for solar across the entire industry. That's still going to happen. The question is, will the industry actually commoditize based off the current view of solar as a scam? Everybody lies to me about it, and it doesn't work. And that's what needs to be fixed in order to be able to make a quick course correction to get back onto an actual commoditized industry where we can maintain profits, maintain profitability in the industry, maintain the goals that a lot of these states have of, you know, I want to get to, you know, net zero by 2050, whatever the case may be. If you don't have consumer adoption, you don't have a long-term industry.
No. Well, and if people take a look, if people aren't familiar with the technology lifestyle adaption cycle, where you don't get into early majorities till you're about 16% market, you know, addressable market. And, you know, states like California have gotten there. You know, you have in the mid 20s as far as adoption, and thanks to some of the laws they passed. Unfortunately, net metering 3.0 kind of crushed that a little bit. But in whole, if you look at the whole United States, depends on whose numbers you're looking at, you know, 6, 7, 8% adoption rate. we're still in an early portion of the early adopters. I mean, we're not into an early majority. And I think some of the confusion in the marketplace out there actually is slowing things down. So let's talk about your different, and you know, you guys touched on several things. What area of your business is growing the fastest right now? What's the biggest demand?
It's kind of hard to pinpoint one.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about all of them.
Here's the reason why. So when we first started out, we were trying to monetize licensure because we left the industry. I sold my company.
Yep.
Brian exited all his aspects. We closed down anything involving solar installation, sales, marketing, or lead generation. We don't do any of that stuff. We can't do any of that stuff with our public benefit. That way we can be third party non-biased, right? Mm-hmm. There was zero adoption for licensure at that time because nobody, no sales rep wanted to volunteer to pay for a license. No company wanted to force their sales reps to pay for a license, even though it was only like $30.
Right.
So we started transitioning that. Now we have installation sponsors where, you know, it's like, I'm just going to require it. Great. Then we're not going to go ahead and we're not going to charge. There's no cost for the license if your installer requires it.
Right.
That's called a sponsorship. And most of the time, and it's been coming up during the conversations of, because it's so integrated with the welcome call,
mm-hmm.
They're talking to us about the welcome call. We need this back in compliance. We need to make sure that we are separated from the sale more. We need to try to catch deceptive sales before we get the contract signed, right? It's, okay, great. So then do you want to start the sale with the end result in mind? And all of a sudden it's like now licensure is the hottest ticket. Everybody wants their salespeople to get licensed. They don't have to go through our training. We're training agnostic, but they do have to pass a test, and it's AI proctored. So we know if you're the individual that put in their license to get their license, you can't get a separate license number down the road, and you are the one taking that test. And if you leave that, then your license is going to be revoked. If you let somebody else do it, your license is going to be revoked. That tells the entire industry that this person should not be hired. They cannot be trusted. They have 30 complaints against them for malicious sales and deceptive sales tactics. We vet all these complaints. So when we thought it was just that our welcome call was taking off like crazy, all of a sudden the licensure aspect popped up at the exact same moment.
Exact same time. Yeah.
And yeah, so it's both of those things. And we have a couple other, you know, little technologies, but it's really that welcome call
mm-hmm.
and then getting these salespeople licensed, getting dealers licensed and having that trackability as well. So they can not, installers don't have to worry about pipelines getting stolen if they jump from company to company anymore.
Sure.
And same thing with from the salesperson at dealer level. Don't take my pipeline. Those
yeah.
belong to the contractor, which is the installer, not to the salesperson or the dealer.
Right. Right?
So it's a two-parter, but yeah. It's really the welcome call that launched that.
The welcome call that launched that. Okay.
Yeah.
So I know you guys are drilled into this, you know, on, was it March 11th? The Department of Labor put some more teeth back into, or trying to put more teeth back into, the Fair Labor Act in regards to what really constitutes a 1099 versus a W-2. And when I looked at that law, it looks rather nuanced and somewhat nebulous because the policy that DOL put out was, hey, we recognize that gig 1099 is an important part of the economy, when you look at everything from an Uber driver up to like what we're talking about in delivering solar, and we need to have these other things. And so, but it didn't really get as specific. And so, you know, where are you guys working with that? I mean, you mentioned what happened in Nevada. I mean, where do you see that going? Because to me, what they did in March, it's this month, it I think it caused as much confusion as it did bring clarity. So do you feel like we're going to be heading to mostly a W-2 model, a 1099? What are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting because you, like through this, you know, you talked about gig economy, you start to think about like Uber and Lyft of years prior, but where we're looking at it, and I'm glad you brought up Nevada as well, is like, we've already seen some of this discussion related to Nevada, but what it brings up potentially is you start running down the road of wage discrimination.
Right.
And so it gets a little tricky on that part. So rather than focusing necessarily on how somebody's expensing items and paying their taxes,
right,
we took it to zoom out more of, going back to the standards, right? So if we think about solar battery storage, there just haven't been good standards on training or, you know, compliance measures or things like that. And so for us, it's going to be more of, I think the industry through some of the vertical aspects will be driving some more of the W-2 aspects of things, where, you know, installers are trying to take more control of what's going on. I think there's going to be a dynamic as well where, you know, obviously consumers these days are extremely informed or can be extremely informed on things. And so that's where consumers are going to start demanding more of these compliance measures and standardization of the industry or credentials of the industry. And so that's where, for them, they're thinking of their house, you know, one of, if not the most important asset that they own. They want to make sure that if somebody's doing a multi-five, potentially six-figure project with solar, battery storage, retrofits, you know, HVAC, electrification, all these things, right? Make sure that those folks are credentialed. They're held to a standard. They've got some skin in the game. There's potential recourse for them if something goes awry. So that'll push towards some of the commoditization, but it's the credential and standards that consumers are rightfully more focused on rather than, you know, somebody's tax basis.
Yeah, I get that too, because the most important thing is, are we protecting the people who are actually paying for this industry? You know, the consumer, the small business, the resident. Now, you know, I look at this from all angles, you know, being in the fact that I'm in energy, renewable energy delivery. To me, this looks like an advantage if I am in compliance and you know, using your services and having people in compliance compared to the two boys, a dog and a ladder guy. I should be able to basically exclude them from consideration if they don't have it. What are your thoughts in that area?
We've seen a lot of it. So we get messages from sales reps almost every day at this point. I'm winning like 100% of the deals that I'm going into now, just because I have a credential with you guys and I can show them that, because you can download the ethics. The customers can see the ethics and the standards I'm holding people to. And it's like, oh, is this other guy licensed? Did he get it? How long has he been in the industry? Well, let's find out. They search on the website. Now you have something tangible. This is the thing. Our industry is not tangible. Our sales is not a tangible sale.
Right.
It's not like going to buy a car where it's just like, okay, so, or if, like if I'm getting flooring, I can hold my samples. There's nothing for the customer to hold on to except for an idea.
Right.
So they have to trust you. And this is a huge trust component. So now we're seeing that folks who have our license who are competing, they're getting the sale, number one. Yep. They have a happier customer. They're getting delivered better information. There's lower cancellation rates. We're still getting more of these numbers in, but what company dropped their cancellation rate by like 3% in a matter of months by adopting the license? Customers have better expectations, so there's more going to roof, which is absolutely crucial, and then less long-term confusion and customer service calls that are coming in because that point of sale, and they're held to the standard of communication to the end of installation and even after the fact. Especially that's what dealers are there for.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is customer service, sales, recruiting, and marketing. That's a dealership. That's not the install issue. And you're that bridge between the installer. That's the contract, right? So this is what we're seeing, and it's huge, and it's been a great benefit to the dealers, the installers, and the salespeople from what we've seen.
Now, are you guys working with the state to start to push for licensure, you know, across the country? Because, you know, every state has their own set of laws, and I think it's important that this gets adopted nationwide. So are you guys working with the state legislatures or even perhaps federal?
Yes to both. And, you know, exactly to that point is, you know, state by state, certainly we know that some states have more solar than others, but
yes,
what we look at is rather than necessarily state specific standards, which starts to get extremely tricky for companies going across many states. Like, you know, you brought up power earlier too, 23 states. We want to zoom out and you know, so we're doing work at the federal level to focus more on what does that national standard look like, and you know, have it be where you know there is the credential and compliance aspect across the whole country, and very important is the reciprocity as well of, you know, if you do something bad in one state, you know, that could follow you to another state, right?
Yes,
today
it should.
Doesn't.
Oh, it
and
doesn't.
That's the problem. And so, you know, as we look at, you know, again, we've got a lot of door-to-door sales. There's some vertical aspect where there's some in-house sales. I started in the industry in 2010 with virtual sales, and that's growing much more now.
Yes.
We've got people touching all over the country. So, you know, the nationwide credential and compliance aspect of that is really going to be critical for the growth of the industry.
So how's that being received at the federal level?
Very well. And so, you know, it's something where, again, federal needs to work with states. Government isn't the fastest moving entity,
no.
Right? But it's something where it's well received, and now it's starting to focus on like working groups and narrow down to like what are the measures? What does the software look like? What are the standards? You know, compliance details, and that's what's going on now, and some measures are moving forward. But Chris, I don't know if you wanted to add any more.
Yeah, so it's important to understand that a lot of these legislators have no idea how solar works and how the industry has grown to what it has. And this is usually, they don't know. You talk to a lot of them, right?
Oh, yeah.
They just think it's the wild, wild west. That people go do whatever they want. In some cases, that's true, unfortunately. But that's our first question to them. So we've spent a lot of time where we've actually helped get rid of some of these crazy bills. We promoted licensure to where they're saying, okay, so this cycle, we're going to do this. And then we want to move into it because it was too far into their bill writing process to revamp it, the entire thing. Other states, we've tried to keep them out completely from doing it because it was the wrong approach on how they were going to do licensure, and then try to group it up underneath like real estate, which would abolish solar from that entire state basically until realtors got up to board, right?
Right.
So it's trying to find that balance. So the first question we ask any legislator, any regulator that we talk to is, do you understand how the industry works and how it got to what it is today? And if they don't, then we explain and we tell them how it works. And once they get that, well, it's not going to be tackled in one session. This is going to be a multi-session.
Yeah.
And it's got to sit down. It's got to evolve. It can't just be jumped in. And solar is not an end-all be, or licensure is not an end-all be-all to solve the solar problems. But it is the foundation and the start for long-term accountability and rebuilding of trust.
No, I'll applaud you guys on this because it's such a needed thing. So, all right, I'm going to skip over to the other side of this a little bit. We've talked a little bit about the providers and licensing there. What if I'm a consumer and I've got an issue? How's that work with you guys?
Yeah, so we have a public page. You can go onto our site and you could file a complaint. Even prior to that, you have the ability to look up, you know, state laws, consumer protection details. That's a free benefit on our site. It's technically our public benefit side of it, as well. Looking at utility information, we've got a whole utility database. But if you've gotten to the point where you've got a complaint with your solar system or your sales experience, what have you, you can go on our site. We can get you the link.
Well, why don't we just give the link right now, Brian?
Yeah, so mintustechnologies.ai/complaint.
Okay.
So you can go on there. What's important is we're not a review site. We're not trying to give people 5 stars.
Oh, like, so you mean you're not Solar Yelp?
No, that's unnecessary.
Maybe in the future.
But if we think back to Chris's earlier point of, you know, not reinventing the wheel and thinking of other licensed industries, like look at real estate, right? There's a complaint process.
Right.
No need to reinvent that wheel. So similar type of model where you can, as a consumer, you can go on a public forum, file that complaint. For us, you know, that complaint gets vetted. And so it's not just something where anybody can put something in there and have it go public. you know, supporting information is required. Our team will vet it with that client and confirm, like, yes, that is a valid complaint. We can help you get some sort of resolution and work through that process. And at the same time, let other parties be aware, like, say if it was a sales problem, we want that installer to be aware of, like, hey, you know, you've got some malicious activity going on. This could go against your license. You know, you should get involved as well. And so
it goes back to the 80-20 rule. Cause look at all the major installers that have complaints against them or have bad reviews. Most of those are sales related problems that the installer knew nothing about because the sales group stopped answering the phone call, or the salesperson is no longer with the company and he didn't refer him to who he should have referred him to. Right. So it's really kind of kills two birds with one stone on that complaint process. Cause yeah, we're vetting it. We're talking to the customer. We're getting copies of the proposal. We're getting copies of, you know, any text messages that they shared with the salesperson to see, you know, was this malicious? And then we can sometimes just, and it happens more often than not, it was a miscommunication. We retrain the customer on their mind and then they're fine. Then they don't write any negative reviews. Cause as soon as that review goes up, the installer jumps on like, wait, what do you mean? They go and they fix the problem and the customer's happy, but the review never goes away, or it goes to the AG and then they have to get out of the AG's office because it was a simple answer to a question. Cause most of these customers complain because they want information. They want to know they weren't forgotten about.
Yeah. So I'm going to share my own personal horror story with this. Could have been avoided back when we got solar 3 years ago. We had talked to a sales organization, so a company that was just out there selling, okay? Their installations were being delivered by a national company. I'm not going to name anybody because I don't want to give anybody black eyes and that stuff, but at Freedom. It wasn't even before we went live, before we got our operational certificate from the utility company here, that the sales organization disappeared. So, or the sales rep first disappeared and then the sales organization. So I just had a few quick, simple questions. I wanted to know some configuration issues on my, because I'm a geek. I have those kinds of questions. My wife had a couple tax things. We couldn't get answers from anybody. I mean, it was horrible. We'd call Freedom. They'd point fingers over to the seller. We'd try to get a hold of the owner of the seller. They would tell, well, I don't know where this guy is. And then he would point me back to Freedom. And here I am as the consumer. I just spent $56,000 putting this on my house. And like you said, your home for most Americans is their largest asset. Holy cow, and I can't get some simple answers. Man, I would have loved to have something like this where I could have gone and said, hey, I've got some issues. Can somebody help me with a complaint? And, oh, were these guys in compliance from end to end, from the sales organization?
The delivery. And so I don't know. I see the need for this so much. It's crazy.
Way too many stories are like that. It's the problem. It all goes back to, it's like, I just want to know.
Yeah.
Why is it taking so long? Why did the permits go back four or five times? Most sales reps don't know what a red line is on it. They think a red line is what they get paid. No, there's red lines on permits.
Yes.
And those are important to deal with because you can't install without a permit. I'm going to say that a little bit louder. You can't install without a permit.
Right.
So, you know, it's crazy because you don't control the company's calendar or the county's calendar, or the city's calendar. You can't speed up that process. You can't promise somebody you're going to speed it up because short of bribery, there's nothing you can do to speed up an install process. And that, again, that's a legal issue. But these are the things. Customers are like, if I would have known, I wouldn't have complained. If I would have known,
yes,
I wouldn't have written a bad review. I wouldn't have submitted you to the AG. I wouldn't have done these things because somebody just needed to pick up the phone and answer a simple question. And the problem is that because there's no fiduciary responsibility, there's no long-term accountability for the sales rep. Well, I got my commission. I'm going to buy my car. I'm going to get a new apartment. I'm going to go on vacation and I don't have to pick up the phone anymore. This is a long-term sale. This is, you know, sometimes 60 to 90 days, if not longer, depending on, you know, issues that come up with ordering or, you know, we've been on the install side. We all know this stuff. There's just stuff that's out of your hands. You got to keep that customer happy and you got to make sure that you're there for customer service.
Well, I was probably a dope because I should have picked it up in the whole process. when the sales rep said, hey, I'm going to go away for the, well, because we did this later in the year. I'm going to go out to Moab for the next 6 weeks. I'll be in touch. Here's my cell phone number. And I'm like, when I kept trying to call him, I'm like, well, is he in a spot out there in the southern Utah desert where he can't get a phone call? Anyway, I don't want to belabor my drama. Look, it all worked out fine, but eventually. So what's on the horizon for you guys? What for you guys? What's next? What's the next meaningful thing that you're delivering?
We have a lot of stuff in the pipeline. I think the biggest thing is industry-wide licensure adoption and working with the right associations, fixing some misconceptions from who we were when we started originally with Mentis Corp. Because that was, we were, it's like, look, we need to make money somehow. And licensure was the only technology that we had. And it put us, it put a little bit of a stain on the initiative that we were trying to push. And now we want to get this donated. We want to donate this tech to the industry for consumer and for any type of regulatory use, whether it's installer, finance companies, state, utility, whoever it is. And this, the licensure should not be a monetized effort moving forward. And that's really the biggest thing that, that we can provide the industry is a little bit more security, knowing that we're here to fight for the industry. You got seasoned veterans here who know we're not just some people who developed some tech and said, hey, you know, we think that this is how this should work. I've sold solar. Right. I sold solar for many, many, many years. I knocked many, many, many doors. My record for selling personal sales on the doors is 57 in a month. So I'm not somebody who came in, sold a couple deals and decided, you know, this is how the industry should work.
Right.
This is, we collaborate with finance companies and with regulators and with legal teams. Like this is how it should work. And this is how we keep it from stunting the industry. And this is really the biggest thing that we can provide aside from our AI solutions. We have plenty of those and we're happy to talk to any capital provider or installer that, that needs help with some of these compliance aspects.
Okay, so I'm a geek, all right? So I've been in software since college. Tell me a little bit about how you guys are using AI. Because people, when you say AI, it sounds good when you say it fast. AI. But what? How are you guys applying the AI to what you're doing?
So it's... we all know how AI works right now. AI is really, it's kind of like a trigger word for a lot of people, right? And that's all it is. It's really exciting. It's new. You can use it to generate a couple of phone calls if you want to. You can do it to answer some customer questions. We took it from a different approach and we developed some proprietary IP that transitioned the AI from a generative type of needing a response to being able to be full functional for compliance. So now we can ID parse salespeople who enter the industry. We compare the ID of the consumer to the contract. We verify facial identity during the entire call through AI, and we're able to trigger manual reviews on that phone call to make sure that it's actually the person that you're supposed to be talking to, and the validation of data. And this is the big aspects that we're doing. So from the point of sale until that thing's installed, and even after the fact, this AI is making sure that the person who came in the industry is the right person, they're trained, and that customer is the right person. So it actually helps protect consumers and capital providers from deceptive customers, because those do exist.
Yeah,
they're like, I'm gonna get a quick buck and I'm gonna sue this company.
Right.
Now the RAI actually shows everything that you knew that this was done correctly.
Right. Well, I thank you for clarifying that, because so many people don't realize. I mean, some of the first uses of AI were just like at Amazon using suggestive selling. If you bought this book, here's four others that are like it. Okay.
Yeah.
So it is
Google. It's
same thing.
It's, hey, it finishes your question for you, right? That's
right.
That's all AI really is. If and then, right? So this happens and this happens and this is going to happen. So what we really have to do is apply a lot of these win features. And the problem is that AI is very fragmented in a lot of these languages. They don't talk to each other.
Exactly.
Right. So it's like, okay, cool. I got this platform to create some training videos. I got this one to talk to customers. I got this, and you get portal lag. It's no. So what RIP does, and a lot of, and we're developing our own proprietary languages as well. But the cool thing that ours does is everything lives in one, and then we API it back to your platform. So you don't have to worry about creating any of this stuff for your compliance.
Right.
It's all done. And you just hop in, say, you know, here's the trigger. So now I don't have portal lag. I don't have 50 different portals that I have to jump into in order to be able to use some type of functional AI where it's creating a script for me and then going to create a video and then going to go push it out to consumers. We have some of that stuff on the horizon, which is fantastic. But this compliance aspect of it, there's way too many lawsuits that are happening that could have been avoided.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, you guys give out your website again so people can get in touch with you.
MentisTechnologies.ai
or
MentisTech.ai. Either one's going to get you to the same spot.
Okay.
You can see it right behind Chris on the background.
Yes, right now. Background. Now, for those of who are watching video today, you know, we're going to have some podcasts of listeners. Well, a lot more podcast listeners. So, all right. So I'm going to skip into the last little bit here. I appreciate this has been fascinating for me. I mean, I love this stuff. I mean, not only in being in the industry, but also being a geek, you know, software. I don't code anymore, but I still know enough HTML and JavaScript to be dangerous. So I am there. But all right. Let's see. We started with Chris first when we started the interview. So Brian gets to go first. All right. So here's the concept. Everybody in the world's got a bucket list, right? Oh, the things I want to do. I'm going to jump out of airplanes, you know, whatever it happens to be. But there's an opposite of that, and it starts with an F and rhymes. And so you would get it, you know, because we do have some children listening, sort of a F it list, right? Okay. So, Brian, what might be one thing that might be on that opposite of a bucket list you never want to do?
I guess related to our conversation, I never want to see this industry fail, right? This is why we're motivated to do what we're doing. Is to many, compliance is the boring aspect of, you know, making sure that all your I's are dotted, T's are crossed. But right. A lot of people don't do it. So if people don't pay attention to it, we're going to see the further decline of the industry where consumers, we're already seeing it. Solar's a scam.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. So for the topic of this conversation, I don't want to see that happen.
Okay. Well, that's a nice dressed up answer, but come on, Brian. Mike, my effort list is I don't want to be sitting in a room with a box of snakes. I'm not, you know, and make me stand in it, okay? I'm not a snake guy, all right?
So spiders is okay. We can handle
spiders is okay. So Brian, come on, Brian. Just one little thing that tells the world about Brian. What's something that I want anything to do with?
Seeing my kids suffer. I don't want any part of that.
I'll take that one. I'll take that one. All right, Chris, you're up. We got to get you on this. Balloons. Yeah. What's that?
Air balloons. I have no problem with heights. I've been skydiving. I've been Rocky Mountain climbing. I went, you know, what, 2.7 seconds on a bull named Blue Mansion. Like I've done all that. I'm not getting in a wicker basket with a balloon that my kid can pop. It's not going to happen. I've been to birthday parties. That's a no-go for me.
Oh, that's great. Well, folks, we'll wrap it up for today's conversation. I do want to thank Chris and Brian for coming on. This is so needed in the industry, and it's so important. And I think it should permeate across all renewable technologies. You know, I see these issues with people that are installing heat pumps and tankless water heaters and stuff like that. And what we're working on is residential wind. It needs to be everywhere so consumers are protected. Again, if you want to hit their website, it is mentistechnologies.ai. And so we want to thank everyone for tuning in today. Always remember to, if you are watching on the video platforms, to subscribe and hit notifications. And if you're listening to us today on podcast, make sure you follow. Again, thanks everyone for tuning in. And until next time, we will say what we say every time. Thanks and make it a great day.